and onto the floor, then curled up in my sleeping bag. As I closed my eyes, I began to ponder the riddle of the jade key, but sleep swallowed me whole a few seconds later. I had a dream. I was standing alone in the center of a scorched battlefield, with several different armies arrayed against me. An army of Sixers stood in front of me, and several different Gunter clans surrounded me on all other flanks, brandishing swords and guns and weapons of powerful magic. I looked down at my body. It wasn't Parzival's body. It was my own. And I was wearing armor made of paper. In my right hand was a toy plastic sword, and in my left was a large glass egg. It looked exactly like the glass egg that causes Tom Cruise's character so much grief in Risky Business, but somehow I knew that, in the context of my dream, it was supposed to be Halliday's Easter egg. And I was standing there, out in the open, holding it for all the world to see. In unison, the armies of my enemies let out a fierce battle cry and charged toward me. They converged on my position with bared teeth and blood in their eyes. They were coming to take the egg, and there was nothing I could do to stop them. I knew I was dreaming, and so I expected to wake up before they reached me. But I didn't. The dream continued as the egg was ripped from my grasp, and I felt myself being torn to shreds. Chapter 12. I slept for over 12 hours and missed school entirely. When I finally woke up, I rubbed my eyes and lay there in silence a while, trying to convince myself that the events of the previous day had actually occurred. It all seemed like a dream to me now, far too good to be real. Eventually, I grabbed my visor and got online to find out for sure. Every single news feed seemed to be showing a screenshot of the scoreboard, and my avatar's name was there at the top, in first place. Artemis was still in second place, but the score beside her name had now increased to 109,000, just 1,000 points less than mine. And, like me, she had a copper-colored gate icon beside her score now, too. So she'd done it. While I'd slept, she'd deciphered the inscription on the copper key. Then she'd gone to Middletown, located the gate, and made it all the way through War Games, just a few hours after I had. I no longer felt quite so impressed with myself. I flipped past a few more channels before stopping on one of the major newsfeed networks, where I saw two men sitting in front of a screenshot of the scoreboard. The man on the left, some middle-aged intellectual type billed as Edgar Nash, Gunter expert, appeared to be explaining the scores to the newsfeed anchor beside him. Appears that the avatar named Parzival received slightly more points for being the first to find the copper key, Nash said, pointing to the scoreboard. Then, early this morning, Parzival's score increased another 100,000 points, and a copper gate icon appeared beside his score. The same change occurred to Artemis's score a few hours later. This seems to indicate that both of them have now completed the first of the three gates. The famous three gates that James Halliday spoke of in the Anorak's Invitation video, the anchor said. The very same. But Mr. Nash, after 5 years, how is it that two avatars accomplished this feat on the same day, within just a few hours of each other? Well, I think there's only one plausible answer. These two people, Parzival and Artemis, must be working together. They're probably both members of what is known as a Gunter clan. These are groups of egg hunters who... I frowned and changed the channel, surfing the feeds until I saw an overly enthusiastic reporter interviewing Ogden Morrow via satellite. The Ogden Morrow. Joining us live from his home in Oregon, thanks for being with us today, Mr. Morrow. No problem, Morrow replied. It had been almost 6 years since Morrow had last spoken to the media, but he didn't seem to have aged a day. His wild gray hair and long beard made him look like a cross between Albert Einstein and Santa Claus. That comparison was also a pretty good description of his personality. The reporter cleared his throat, obviously a bit nervous.
Let me start off by asking what your reaction is to the events of the last 24 hours. Were you surprised to see those names appear on Halliday's scoreboard?
Surprised? Yes, a little, I suppose. But excited is probably a better word. Like everyone else, I've been watching and waiting for this to happen. Of course, I wasn't sure if I'd still be alive when it finally did. I'm glad that I am. It's all very exciting, isn't it?
Do you think these two Gunters, Parzival and Artemis, are working together?
I have no idea. I suppose it's possible.
As you know, Gregarious Simulation Systems keeps all Oasis user records confidential, so we have no way of knowing their true identities. Do you think either of them will come forward and reveal themselves to the public?
Not if they're smart, they won't, Morrow said, adjusting his wire-rimmed spectacles. If I were in their shoes, I'd do everything possible to remain anonymous.
Why do you say that?
Because once the world discovers who they really are, they'll never have a moment's peace. If people think you can help them find Halliday's egg, they'll never leave you alone. Trust me, I know from experience.
Yes, I suppose you do. The reporter flashed a fake smile. However, this network has contacted both Parzival and Artemis via email, and we've extended generous monetary offers to each of them in return for an exclusive interview, either in the Oasis or here in the real world.
I'm sure they're receiving many such offers, but I doubt they'll accept, Morrow said. Then he looked straight into the camera, and I felt as if he was now speaking directly to me. Anyone smart enough to accomplish what they have should know better than to risk everything by talking to the vultures in the media.
The reporter chuckled uncomfortably. Ah, Mr. Morrow, I don't think that's called for.
Morrow shrugged.
Too bad.
I do. The reporter cleared his throat again.
Well, moving on. Do you have any predictions about what changes we might see on the scoreboard in the weeks to come?
I'm betting that those other 8 empty slots will fill up pretty quickly.
What makes you think so?
One person can keep a secret, but not two, he replied, staring directly into the camera again. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But I am sure of one thing. The Sixers are going to use every dirty trick at their disposal to learn the location of the Copper Key and the First Gate.
You're referring to the employees of Innovative Online Industries?
Yes, IOI, the Sixers. Their sole purpose is to exploit loopholes in the contest rules and subvert the intention of Jim's will. The very soul of the Oasis is at stake here. The last thing Jim would have wanted is for his creation to fall into the hands of a fascist multinational conglomerate like IOI.
Mr. Morrow, IOI owns this network.
Of course they do, Morrow shouted gleefully.
They own practically everything, including you, pretty boy. I mean, did they tattoo a UPC code on your ass when they hired you to sit there and spout their corporate propaganda?
The reporter began to stutter, glancing nervously at something off camera.
Quick, Morrow said. You better cut me off before I say anything else.
He broke up into gales of laughter just as the network cut his satellite feed. The reporter took a few seconds to regroup, then said,
Thank you again for joining us today, Mr. Morrow. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have to speak with him. Now, let's go back to Judy, who is standing by with a panel of renowned Halliday scholars.
I smiled and closed the vid feed window, pondering the old man's advice. I'd always suspected that Morrow knew more about the contest than he was letting on. Morrow and Halliday had grown up together, founded a company together, and changed the world together. But Morrow had led a very different life from Halliday's, one involving a much greater connection to humanity and a great deal more tragedy. During the mid-90s, back when Gregarious Simulation Systems was still just Gregarious Games, Morrow had married his high school sweetheart, Kira Underwood. Kira was born and raised in London. Her birth name was Karen, but she'd insisted on being called Kira ever since her first viewing of The Dark Crystal. Morrow met her when she spent her junior year as an exchange student at his high school. In his autobiography, Morrow wrote that she was the quintessential geek girl, unabashedly obsessed with Monty Python, comic books, fantasy novels, and video games. She and Morrow shared a few classes at school, and he was smitten with her almost immediately. He invited her to attend his weekly Dungeons & Dragons gaming sessions, just as he'd done with Halliday a few years earlier. And to his surprise, she accepted. "She became the lone female in our weekly gaming group," Morrow wrote, "and every single one of the guys developed a massive crush on her, including Jim. She was actually the one who gave him the nickname Anorak, a British slang term for an obsessive geek. I think Jim adopted it as the name of his D&D character to impress her. Or maybe it was his way of trying to let her know he was in on the joke. The opposite sex made Jim extremely nervous, and Kira was the only girl I ever saw him speak to in a relaxed manner. But even then, it was only in character, as Anorak, during the course of our gaming sessions. And he would only address her as Lucosia, the name of her D&D character." Ogden and Kira began dating. By the end of the school year, when it was time for her to return home to London, the two of them had openly declared their love for each other. They kept in touch during their remaining year of school by emailing every day, using an early pre-internet computer bulletin board network called FidoNet. When they both graduated from high school, Kira returned to the States, moved in with Morrow, and became one of Gregarious Games' first employees. For the first 2 years, she was their entire art department. They got engaged a few years after the launch of the Oasis. They were married a year later, at which time Kira resigned from her position as an artistic director at GSS. She was a millionaire now, too, thanks to her company's stock options. Morrow stayed on at GSS for 5 more years. Then, in the summer of 2022, he announced he was leaving the company. At that time, he claimed it was for personal reasons. But years later, Morrow wrote in his autobiography that he'd left GSS because we were no longer in the video game business, and because he felt that the Oasis had evolved into something horrible. "It had become a self-imposed prison for humanity," he wrote, "a pleasant place for the world to hide from its problems while human civilization slowly collapses, primarily due to neglect." Rumors also surfaced that Morrow had chosen to leave because he'd had a huge falling out with Halliday. Neither of them would confirm or deny these rumors, and no one seemed to know what sort of dispute had ended their long friendship. But sources within the company said that at the time of Morrow's resignation, he and Halliday had not spoken to each other directly in several years. Even so, when Morrow left GSS, he sold his entire share of the company directly to Halliday for an undisclosed sum. Ogden and Kira retired to their home in Oregon and started a nonprofit educational software company, Halcedonia Interactive, which created free interactive adventure games for kids. I'd grown up playing these games, all of which were set in the magical kingdom of Halcedonia. Morrow's games had transported me out of my grim surroundings as a lonely kid growing up in the stacks. They'd also taught me how to do math and solve puzzles while building my self-esteem. In a way, the Morrows were among my very first teachers. For the next decade, Ogden and Kira enjoyed a peaceful, happy existence, living and working in relative seclusion. They tried to have children, but it wasn't in the cards for them. They'd begun to consider adoption when, in the winter of 2034, Kira was killed in a car accident on an icy mountain road just a few miles from their home. After that, Ogden continued to run Halcedonia Interactive on his own. He managed to stay out of the limelight until the morning of Halliday's death, when his home was besieged by the media. As Halliday's former closest friend, everyone assumed he alone could explain why the deceased billionaire had put his entire fortune up for grabs. Morrow eventually held a press conference just to get everyone off his back. It was the last time he'd spoken to the media until today. I'd watched the video of that press conference many, many times. Morrow had begun it by reading a brief statement saying that he hadn't seen or spoken to Halliday in over a decade. "We had a falling out," he said, "and that is something I refuse to discuss, now or in the future. Suffice it to say, I have not communicated with James Halliday in over 10 years. "Then why did Halliday leave you his vast collection of classic coin-operated video games?" a reporter asked. "All of his other material possessions are to be auctioned off. If you are no longer friends, why are you the only person he left anything to?" "I have no idea," Morrow said simply. Another reporter asked Morrow if he planned on looking for Halliday's Easter egg himself, since he'd known Halliday so well and would therefore probably have a better chance than anyone of finding it. Morrow reminded the reporter that the contest rules laid out in Halliday's will stated that no one who had ever worked for Gregarious Simulation Systems, or anyone in their immediate families, was eligible to take part in the contest. "Did you have any idea what Halliday was working on all those years he was in seclusion?" another reporter asked. "No. I suspected he might be working on some new game. Jim was always working on a new game. For him, making games was as necessary as breathing. But I never imagined he was planning something of this magnitude." As the person who knew James Halliday the best, do you have any advice for the millions of people who are now searching for his Easter egg? Where do you think people should start looking for it? "I think Jim made that pretty obvious," Morrow replied, tapping a finger against his temple, just as Halliday had in the Anorak's invitation video. "Jim always wanted everyone to share his obsessions, to love the same things he loved. I think this contest is his way of giving the entire world an incentive to do just that." I closed my file on Morrow and checked my email. The system informed me that I'd received over 2 million new unsolicited messages. These were automatically filed in a separate folder so I could sort through them later. Only 2 new messages were left in my inbox from people on my authorized contact list. One was from H. The other was from Artemis. I opened H's message first. It was vidmail, and his avatar's face appeared in a window. "Holy shit!" he shouted. "I don't believe this! Now you've cleared the motherfucking first gate and you still haven't phoned me? Call my ass! Now! The second you get this!" I considered waiting a few days to call H back, but quickly abandoned that idea. I needed to talk to someone about all this, and H was my best friend. If there was anyone I could trust, it was him. He picked up on the first ring, and his avatar appeared in a new window in front of me. "You dog!" he shouted. "You brilliant, sly, devious dog!" "Hey, H," I said, trying to deadpan it. "What's new?" "What's new? What's new? You mean other than, you know, seeing my best friend's name appear at the top of the scoreboard? Other than that, you mean?" He leaned forward so that his mouth completely filled the vid feed window and shouted, "Other than that, not much. Not much new at all." I laughed. "Sorry it took me a while to call you. I had kind of a late night." "No shit you had a late night," he said. "Look at you. How can you be so calm? Don't you realize what this means? This is huge. This is beyond epic. I mean, congratulations, man." He began to bow repeatedly. "I am not worthy." "Cut it out, okay? It's really not a big deal. I haven't actually won anything yet." "Not a big deal," he cried. "Not a big deal? Are you kidding me? You're a legend now, man. You just became the first Gunter in history to find the copper key and clear the first gate.
You are a god from this moment forth. Do you not realize this, fool? Seriously, stop it. I'm already freaked out enough as it is. Have you seen the news? The whole world is freaking out, and the Gunther boards are going apeshit, and everyone is talking about you, amigo. I know. Listen, I hope you're not pissed at me for keeping you in the dark. I felt really weird about not returning your calls or telling you what I was up to. Oh, come on, he rolled his eyes dismissively. You know damn well that if I'd been in your shoes, I would have done the same thing. That's how the game is played. But, his tone grew more serious, I am curious to know how that Artemis chick happened to find the copper key and clear the gate right after you did. Everyone seems to think you two were working together, but I know that's horseshit. So what happened? Was she following you or something? I shook my head. No, she found the key's hiding place before I did. Last month, she said. She just wasn't able to obtain the key until now. I was silent for a second. I can't really go into the details without, you know. H held up both hands. No worries, I totally understand. I wouldn't want for you to accidentally drop any hints. He flashed his trademark Cheshire grin, and his gleaming white teeth seemed to take up half of the vid feed window. Actually, I should let you know where I am right now. He adjusted his vid feed's virtual camera so that it pulled back from a tight shot of his face to a much wider shot that revealed where he was, standing next to the flat-topped hill just outside the entrance to the Tomb of Horrors. My jaw dropped. How in the hell? Well, when I saw your name all over the news feeds last night, it occurred to me that for as long as I've known you, you've never had the dough to do much traveling. Any traveling, really. So I figured that if you'd found the hiding place of the copper key, it probably had to be somewhere close to Ludus, or maybe even on Ludus. Well done, I said, and I meant it. Not really. I spent hours racking my pea-sized brain before I finally thought to search the map of Ludus for the surface features described in the Tomb of Horrors module. But once I did, everything else clicked into place. And here I am. Congratulations. Yeah, well, it was pretty easy once you pointed me in the right direction. He glanced back over his shoulder at the tomb. I've been searching for this place for years, and all this time it was within walking distance of my school? I feel like a total moron for not figuring it out on my own. You're not a moron, I said. You deciphered the limerick on your own. Otherwise, you wouldn't even know about the Tomb of Horrors module, right? So you're not pissed, he said, that I took advantage of my inside info? I shook my head. No way. I would have done the same thing. Well, regardless, I owe you one, and I won't forget it. I nodded toward the tomb behind him. Have you been inside yet? Yeah, I came back up here to call you while I wait for the server to reset at midnight. The tomb is empty right now because your friend Artemis already blew through here earlier today. We're not friends, I said. She just showed up a few minutes after I got the key. Did you guys throw down? Nah, the tomb is a no PvP zone. I glanced at the time. Looks like you've still got a few hours to kill before the reset. Yeah, I've been studying the original D&D module trying to prepare myself, he said. Want to give me any tips? I grinned. No, not really. Didn't think so. He was silent for a few seconds. Listen, I have to ask you something. Does anyone at your school know your avatar's name? No, I've been careful to keep it a secret. No one there knows me as Parzival, not even the teachers. Good, he said. I took the same precaution. Unfortunately, several of the Gunters who frequent the basement know that we both attend school on Ludus, so they might be able to connect the dots. I'm worried about one in particular. I felt a rush of panic. Irock? H nodded. He's been calling me nonstop since your name appeared on the scoreboard, asking what I know. I played dumb, and he seemed to buy it. But if my name shows up on the scoreboard too, you can bet he'll start bragging that he knows us. And when he starts telling other Gunters that you and I are both students on Ludus, shit, I cursed. Then every Gunther in the Sim will be headed here to search for the Copper Key.
Right, H said.
And before long, the location of the tomb will be common knowledge.
I sighed.
Well, then you better get the key before that happens.
I'll do my best. He held up a copy of the Tomb of Horrors module.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to reread this thing for the 100th time today.
Good luck, H, I said. Give me a call once you've cleared the gate.
If I clear the gate.
You will, I said.
And when you do, we should meet in the basement to talk.
You got it, amigo.
He waved goodbye and was about to end the call when I spoke up.
Hey, H?
Yeah?
You might want to brush up on your jousting skills, I said.
You know, between now and midnight. He looked puzzled for a moment, then a smile of understanding spread across his face.
I gotcha, he said.
Thanks, pal.
Good luck.
As his vidfeed window winked out, I found myself wondering how H and I would remain friends through everything that lay ahead. Neither of us wanted to work as a team, so from here on out, we would be in direct competition with each other. Would I eventually regret helping him today, or come to resent that I'd unwittingly led him to the Copper Key's hiding place? I pushed these thoughts aside and opened the email from Artemis. It was an old-fashioned text message. Dear Parzival, congrats! See? You're famous now, just like I said. Although it looks like we've both been thrust into the limelight. Kind of scary, eh? Thanks for the tip about playing on the left side. You were right. Somehow that did the trick. But don't go thinking I owe you any favors, mister.
Smiley.
The first gate was pretty wild, wasn't it? Not at all what I expected. It would have been cool if Halliday had given me the option to play Holly Sheedy instead, but what can you do? This new riddle is a real head-scratcher, isn't it? I hope it doesn't take us another 5 years to decipher it. Anyhow, I just wanted to say that it was an honor to meet you. I hope our paths cross again soon. Sincerely, Artemis. P.S. Enjoy being number one while you can, pal. It won't last for long. I reread her message several times, grinning like a dopey schoolboy. Then I typed out my reply. Dear Artemis, congratulations to you, too. You weren't kidding. Competition clearly brings out the best in you. You're welcome for the tip about playing on the left. You totally owe me a favor now.
Wink.
The new riddle is a cinch. I think I've already got it figured out, actually. What's the holdup on your end? It was an honor to meet you, too. If you ever feel like hanging out in a chat room, let me know. MTFBWYA Parzival. P.S. Are you challenging me? Bring the pain, woman. After rewriting it a few dozen times, I tapped the send button. Then I pulled up my screenshot of the Jade Key riddle and began to study it, syllable by syllable. But I couldn't seem to concentrate. No matter how hard I tried to focus, my mind kept drifting back to Artemis. Chapter 13. H cleared the first gate early the next day. His name appeared on the scoreboard in third place with a score of 108,000 points. The value of obtaining the Copper Key had dropped another 1,000 points for him, but the value of clearing the first gate remained unchanged at 100,000. I returned to school that same morning. I'd considered calling in sick, but was concerned that my absence might raise suspicions. When I got there, I realized I shouldn't have worried. Due to the sudden renewed interest in the hunt, over half of the student body and quite a few of the teachers didn't bother showing up. Since everyone at school knew my avatar by the name Wade 3, no one paid any attention to me. Roaming the halls unnoticed, I decided that I enjoyed having a secret identity. It made me feel like Clark Kent or Peter Parker. I thought my dad would probably have gotten a kick out of that. That afternoon, Irock sent emails to H and me attempting to blackmail us. He said that if we didn't tell him how to find the Copper Key and the first gate, he would post what he knew about us to every Gunter message board he could find. When we refused, he made good on his threat and began telling anyone who would listen that H and I were both students on Ludus. Of course, he had no way of proving he really knew us,
And by that time, there were hundreds of other Gunters claiming to be our close personal friends, so H and I were hoping his posts would go unnoticed. But they didn't, of course. At least two other Gunters were sharp enough to connect the dots between Ludus, the Limerick, and the Tomb of Horrors. The day after IROC let the cat out of the bag, the name Daito appeared in the fourth slot on the scoreboard. Then, less than 15 minutes later, the name Shoto appeared in the fifth slot. Somehow, they'd both obtained a copy of the Copper Key on the same day without waiting for the server to reset at midnight. Then, a few hours later, both Daito and Shoto cleared the first gate. No one had ever heard of these avatars before, but their names seemed to indicate they were working together, either as a duo or as part of a clan. Shoto and Daito were the Japanese names for the short and long swords worn by samurai. When worn as a set, the two swords were called Daisho, and this quickly became the nickname by which the two of them were known. Only 4 days had passed since my name had first appeared on the scoreboard, and one new name had appeared below mine on each subsequent day. The secret was out now, and the hunt seemed to be shifting into high gear. All week, I was unable to focus on anything my teachers were saying. Luckily, I only had 2 months of school left, and I'd already earned enough credits to graduate, even if I coasted from here on out. So I drifted from one class to the next in a daze, puzzling over the Jade Key riddle, reciting it again and again in my mind. The captain conceals the Jade Key in a dwelling long neglected. But you can only blow the whistle once the trophies are all collected. According to my English Lit textbook, a poem with 4 lines of text and an alternate line rhyme scheme was known as a quatrain, so that became my nickname for the riddle. Each night after school, I logged out of the Oasis and filled the blank pages of my Grail diary with possible interpretations of the quatrain. What captain was Anorak talking about? Captain Kangaroo? Captain America? Captain Buck Rogers in the 25th century? And where in the hell was this dwelling long neglected? That part of the clue seemed maddeningly nonspecific. Halliday's boyhood home on Middletown couldn't really be classified as neglected, but maybe he was talking about a different house in his hometown. That seemed too easy and too close to the hiding place of the Copper Key. At first, I thought the neglected dwelling might be a reference to Revenge of the Nerds, one of Halliday's favorite films. In that movie, the nerds of the title rent a dilapidated house and fix it up during a classic 80s music montage. I visited a recreation of the Revenge of the Nerds house on the planet Skolnik and spent a day searching it, but it proved to be a dead end. The last 2 lines of the quatrain were also a complete mystery. They seemed to say that once you found the neglected dwelling, you would have to collect a bunch of trophies and then blow some kind of whistle. Or did that line mean blow the whistle in the colloquial sense, as in to reveal a secret or alert someone to a crime? Either way, it didn't make any sense to me. But I continued to go over each line, word by word, until my brain began to feel like aquafresh toothpaste. That Friday, after school, the day Daito and Shoto cleared the first gate, I was sitting in a secluded spot a few miles from my school, a steep hill with a solitary tree at the top. I liked to come here to read, to do my homework, or to simply enjoy the view of the surrounding green fields. I didn't have access to that kind of view in the real world. As I sat under the tree, I sorted through the millions of messages still clogging my inbox. I'd been sifting through them all week. I'd received notes from people all over the globe. Letters of congratulation, pleas for help, death threats, interview requests, several long, incoherent diatribes from Gunthers whose quest for the egg had clearly driven them insane. I'd also received invitations to join 4 of the biggest Gunter clans, the Oviraptors, Clandestiny, The Keymasters, and Team Banzai. I told each of them thanks, but no thanks. When I got tired of reading my fan mail, I sorted out all the messages that were tagged as business-related and began reading through those. I discovered that I'd received several offers from movie studios and book publishers, all interested in buying the rights to my life story. I deleted them all because I'd decided never to reveal my true identity to the world, at least not until after I found the egg. I'd also received several endorsement deal offers from companies who wanted to use Parzival's name and face to sell their services and products. An electronics retailer was interested in using my avatar to promote their line of Oasis immersion hardware so they could sell Parzival-approved haptic rigs, gloves, and visors. I also had offers from a pizza delivery chain, a shoe manufacturer, and an online store that sold custom avatar skins. There was even a toy company that wanted to manufacture a line of Parzival lunchboxes and action figures. These companies were offering to pay me in Oasis credits, which would be transferred directly to my avatar's account. I couldn't believe my luck. I replied to every single one of the endorsement inquiries, saying that I would accept their offers under the following conditions. I wouldn't have to reveal my true identity, and I would only do business through my Oasis avatar. I started receiving replies within the hour, with contracts attached. I couldn't afford to have a lawyer look them over, but they all expired within a year's time, so I just went ahead and signed them electronically and emailed them back along with a three-dimensional model of my avatar to be used for the commercials. I also received requests for an audio clip of my avatar's voice, so I sent them a synthesized clip of a deep baritone that made me sound like one of those guys who did voiceovers for movie trailers. Once they received everything, my avatar's new sponsors informed me that they'd wire my first round of payments to my Oasis account within the next 48 hours. The amount of money I was going to receive wouldn't be enough to make me rich, not by a long shot, but to a kid who'd grown up with nothing, it seemed like a fortune. I did some quick calculations. If I lived frugally, I would have enough to move out of the stacks and rent a small efficiency apartment somewhere. For a year, at least. The very thought filled me with nervous excitement. I'd dreamed of escaping the stacks for as long as I could remember, and now it appeared that dream was about to come true. With the endorsement deals taken care of, I continued to sort through my email messages. When I sorted the remaining messages by sender, I discovered that I'd received over 5,000 emails from innovative online industries. Actually, they'd sent me 5,000 copies of the same email. They'd been resending the same message all week since my name first appeared on the scoreboard, and they were still resending it once every minute. The Sixers were mail-bombing me to make sure they got my attention. The emails were all marked maximum priority with the subject line, "Urgent business proposition. Please read immediately." The second I opened one, a delivery confirmation was sent back to IOI, letting them know that I was finally reading their message. After that, they stopped resending it. Dear Parzival, first, allow me to congratulate you on your recent accomplishments, which we at Innovative Online Industries hold in the highest regard. On behalf of IOI, I wish to make you a highly lucrative business proposition, the exact details of which we can discuss in a private chat link session. Please use the attached contact card to reach me at your earliest convenience, regardless of the day or hour. Given our reputation within the Gunter community, I would understand if you were hesitant to speak with me. However, please be aware that if you choose not to accept our proposal, we intend to approach each of your competitors. At the very least, we hope you will do us the honor of being the first to hear our generous offer. What have you got to lose? Thank you for your kind attention. I look forward to speaking with you. Sincerely, Nolan Sorrento, Head of Operations, Innovative Online Industries. Despite the message's reasonable tone, the threat behind it was crystal clear. The Sixers wanted to recruit me. Or they wanted to pay me to tell them how to find the copper key and clear the first gate. And if I refused, they would go after Artemis, then H, Daito, Shoto, and every other Gunter who managed to get their name up on the scoreboard. These shameless corporate sleazebags wouldn't stop until they found someone dumb enough or desperate enough to give in and sell them the information they needed. My first impulse was to delete every single copy of the email and pretend I'd never received it, but I changed my mind. I wanted to know exactly what IOI was going to offer, and I couldn't pass up the chance to meet Nolan Sorrento, the Sixers' infamous leader. There was no danger meeting with him via chat link, as long as I was careful about what I said. I considered teleporting to Incipio before my interview to buy a new skin for my avatar, maybe a tailored suit, something flashy and expensive. But then I thought better of it. I had nothing to prove to that corporate asshat. After all, I was famous now. I would roll into the meeting wearing my default skin and a fuck-off attitude. I would listen to their offer, then tell them to kiss my simulated ass. Maybe I'd record the whole thing and post it on YouTube. I prepped for the meeting by pulling up a search engine and learning everything I could about Nolan Sorrento. He had a PhD in computer science. Prior to becoming head of operations at IOI, he'd been a high-profile game designer, overseeing the creation of several third-party RPGs that ran inside the Oasis. I'd played all of his games, and they were actually pretty good. He'd been a decent coder back before he sold his soul. It was obvious why IOI had hired him to lead their lackeys. They figured a game designer would have the best chance of solving Halliday's grand video game puzzle. But Sorrento and the Sixers had been at it for over 5 years and still had nothing to show for their efforts. And now that Gunter avatar names were appearing on the scoreboard left and right, the IOI brass had to be freaking out. Sorrento was probably catching all kinds of heat from his superiors. I wondered if it had been Sorrento's idea to try to recruit me, or if he'd been ordered to do it. Once I'd done my homework on Sorrento, I felt like I was ready to sit down with the devil. I pulled up the contact card attached to Sorrento's email and tapped the chat link invitation icon at the bottom. Chapter 14. As I finished connecting to the chat link session, my avatar materialized on a grand observation deck with a stunning view of over a dozen oasis worlds suspended in black space beyond the curved window. I appeared to be on a space station, or a very large transport ship. I couldn't tell which. Chatlink sessions worked differently from chat rooms, and they were a lot more expensive to host. When you opened a chatlink, an insubstantial copy of your avatar was projected into another Oasis location. Your avatar wasn't actually there, and so it appeared to other avatars as a slightly transparent apparition. But you could still interact with the environment in a limited way, walking through doors, sitting in chairs, and so forth. Chat links were primarily used for business purposes when a company wanted to host a meeting in a specific Oasis location without spending the time and money to transport everyone's avatars to it. This was the first time I'd ever used one. I turned around and saw that my avatar was standing in front of a large, C-shaped reception desk. The IOI corporate logo, giant, overlapping chrome letters 20 feet tall, floated above it. As I approached the desk, an impossibly beautiful blonde receptionist stood to greet me. "Mr. Parzival," she said, bowing slightly, "welcome to Innovative Online Industries. Just a moment. Mr. Sorrento is already on his way to greet you." I wasn't sure how that could be, since I hadn't warned them I was coming. While I waited, I tried to activate my avatar's vidfeed recorder, but IOI had disabled recording in this chat link session. They obviously didn't want me to have video evidence of what was about to go down. So much for my plan to post the interview on YouTube. Less than a minute later, another avatar appeared through a set of automatic doors on the opposite side of the observation deck. He headed right for me, boots clicking on the polished floor. It was Sorrento. I recognized him because he wasn't using a standard-issue Sixer avatar, one of the perks of his position. His avatar's face matched the photos of him I'd seen online. Blonde hair and brown eyes, a hawkish nose. He did wear the standard Sixer uniform, a navy blue bodysuit with gold epaulets at the shoulders and a silver IOI logo on his right breast, with his employee number printed beneath it, 655-321. "At last," he said as he walked up, grinning like a jackal. "The famous Parzival has graced us with his presence." He extended a gloved right hand. "Nolan Sorrento, Chief of Operations. It's an honor to meet you." "Yeah," I said, doing my best to sound aloof. "Likewise, I guess." Even as a chat link projection, my avatar could still mime shaking his outstretched hand. Instead, I just stared down at it as if he were offering me a dead rat. He dropped it after a few seconds, but his smile didn't falter. It broadened. "Please, follow me." He led me across the deck and back through the automatic doors, which slid open to reveal a large launching bay. It contained a single interplanetary shuttlecraft emblazoned with the IOI logo. Sorrento began to board it, but I halted at the foot of the ramp. "Why bother bringing me here via a chat link?" I asked, motioning to the bay around us. "Why not just give me your sales pitch in a chat room?" "Please, indulge me," he said. "This chat link is part of our sales pitch. We want to give you the same experience you'd have if you came to visit our headquarters in person." Right, I thought. If I had come here in person, my avatar would be surrounded by thousands of Sixers, and I'd be at your mercy. I joined him inside the shuttle. The ramp retracted, and we launched out of the bay. Through the ship's wraparound windows, I saw that we were leaving one of the Sixers' orbital space stations. Looming directly ahead of us was the planet IOI-1, a massive chrome globe. It reminded me of the killer floating spheres in the Phantasm films. Gunters referred to IOI-1 as the Sixer homeworld. The company had constructed it shortly after the contest began to serve as IOI's online base of operations. Our shuttle, which seemed to be flying on automatic pilot, quickly reached the planet and began to skim its mirrored surface. I stared out the window as we did one complete orbit. As far as I knew, no Gunter had ever been given this kind of tour. From pole to pole, IOI-1 was covered with armories, bunkers, warehouses, and vehicle hangars. I also saw airfields dotting the surface, where rows of gleaming gunships, spacecraft, and mechanized battle tanks stood waiting for action. Sorrento said nothing as we surveyed the Sixer Armada. He just let me take it all in. I'd seen screenshots of IOI-1's surface before, but they'd been low-res and taken from high orbit, just beyond the planet's impressive defense grid. The larger clans had been openly plotting to nuke the Sixer operations complex for several years now, but they'd never managed to get past the defense grid or reach the planet's surface. As we completed our orbit, the IOI operations complex swung into view ahead of us. It consisted of three mirror-surfaced towers, two rectangular skyscrapers on either side of a circular one. Seen from above, these three buildings formed the IOI logo. The shuttle slowed and hovered above the O-shaped tower, then spiraled down to a small landing pad on the roof. "Impressive digs, wouldn't you agree?" Sorrento said, finally breaking his silence as we touched down and the ramp lowered. "Not bad." I was proud of the calm in my voice. In truth, I was still reeling from everything I'd just seen. "This is an Oasis replica of the real IOI towers located in downtown Columbus, right?" I said. Sorrento nodded. "Yes, the Columbus complex is our company headquarters. Most of my team works in this central tower. Our close proximity to GSS eliminates any possibility of system lag. And, of course, Columbus doesn't suffer from the rolling power blackouts that plague most major U.S. cities." He was stating the obvious. Gregarious Simulation Systems was located in Columbus, and so was their main Oasis server vault. Redundant mirror servers were located all over the world, but they were all linked to the main node in Columbus. This was why, in the decades since the simulation's launch, The city had become a kind of high-tech mecca. Columbus was where an Oasis user could get the fastest, most reliable connection to the simulation. Most Gunters dreamed of moving there someday, me included. I followed Sorrento off the shuttle and into an elevator adjacent to the landing pad. "You've become quite the celebrity these past few days," he said as we began to descend. "It must be very exciting for you. Probably a little scary too, huh? Knowing you now possess information that millions of people would be willing to kill for?" I'd been waiting for him to say something like this, so I had a reply prepared. "Do you mind skipping the scare tactics and the head games? Just tell me the details of your offer. I have other matters to attend to." He grinned at me like I was a precocious child. "Yes, I'm sure you do," he said. "But please, don't jump to any conclusions about our offer. I think you'll be quite surprised." Then, with a sudden touch of steel in his tone, he added, "In fact, I'm certain of it." Doing my best to hide the intimidation I felt, I rolled my eyes and said, "Whatever, man." A tone sounded as we reached the 106th floor, and the elevator doors swished open. I followed Sorrento past another receptionist and down a long, brightly lit corridor. The decor was something out of a utopian sci-fi flick, high-tech and immaculate. We passed several other Sixer avatars as we walked, and the moment they saw Sorrento, they each snapped to rigid attention and saluted him, as if he were some high-ranking general. Sorrento didn't return these salutes or acknowledge his underlings in any way. Eventually, he led me into a huge open room that appeared to occupy most of the 106th floor. It contained a vast sea of high-walled cubicles, each containing a single person strapped into a high-end immersion rig. "Welcome to IOI's Oology Division," Sorrento said with obvious pride. "So this is Succor's Central, eh?" I said, glancing around. "There's no need to be rude," Sorrento said. "This could be your team." "Would I get my very own cubicle?" "No, you'd have your own office, with a very nice view," he grinned. "Not that you'd spend much time looking at it." I motioned to one of the new Habeshaw immersion rigs. "Nice gear," I said. It really was, too, state of the art. "Yes, it is nice, isn't it?" he said. "Our immersion rigs are heavily modified, and they're all networked together. Our systems allow multiple operators to control any one of our oologists' avatars. So depending on the obstacles an avatar encounters during their quest, control can be instantly transferred to the team member with the skills best suited to deal with the situation." "Yeah, but that's cheating," I said. "Oh, come on now," he said, rolling his eyes. "There's no such thing. Halliday's contest doesn't have any rules. That's one of the many colossal mistakes the old fool made." Before I could reply, Sorrento started walking again, leading me on through the maze of cubicles. "All of our oologists are voice-linked to a support team," he continued, "composed of Halliday scholars, video game experts, pop culture historians, and cryptologists. They all work together to help each of our avatars overcome any challenge and solve every puzzle they encounter." He turned and grinned at me. "As you can see, we've covered all the bases, Parzival. That's why we're going to win." "Yeah," I said, "you guys have been doing a bang-up job so far. Bravo." "Now, why is it that we're talking again?" "Oh, right. You guys have no clue where the copper key is, and you need my help to find it." Sorrento narrowed his eyes, then he began to laugh. "I like you, kid," he said, grinning at me. "You're bright. And you've got cojones. Two qualities I greatly admire." We continued walking. A few minutes later, we arrived in Sorrento's enormous office. Its windows afforded a stunning view of the surrounding city. The sky was filled with air cars and spacecraft, and the planet's simulated sun was just beginning to set. Sorrento sat down behind his desk and offered me the chair directly across from him. "Here we go," I thought as I sat down. "Play it cool, Wade." "So, I'll just cut to the chase," he said. IOI wants to recruit you as a consultant to assist with our search for Halliday's Easter egg. You'll have all of our company's vast resources at your disposal. Money, weapons, magic items, ships, artifacts, you name it. What would my title be? Chief Oologist, he replied. You'd be in charge of the entire division, second in command only to me. I'm talking about 5,000 highly trained, combat-ready avatars, all taking orders directly from you. Sounds pretty sweet, I said, trying hard to sound nonchalant. Of course it does. But there's more. In exchange for your services, we're willing to pay you $2 million a year, with a $1 million signing bonus up front. And, if and when you help us find the egg, you'll get a $25 million bonus. I pretended to add all of those numbers up on my fingers. Wow, I said, trying to sound impressed. Can I work from home, too? Sorrento couldn't seem to tell whether or not I was joking. No, he said, I'm afraid not. You'd have to relocate here to Columbus. But we'll provide you with excellent living quarters here on the premises, and a private office, of course, your own state-of-the-art immersion rig. Hold on, I said, holding up a hand. You mean I'd have to live in the IOI skyscraper? With you and all of the other sucks... oologists? He nodded. Just until you help us find the egg. I resisted the urge to gag. What about benefits? Would I get health care, dental, vision, keys to the executive washroom, shit like that? Of course, he was starting to sound impatient. So, what do you say? Can I think about it for a few days? Afraid not, he said. This could all be over in a few days. We need your answer now. I leaned back and stared at the ceiling, pretending to consider the offer. Sorrento waited, watching me intently. I was about to give him my prepared answer when he raised a hand. Just listen to me a moment before you answer, Sorrento said. I know most Gunters cling to the absurd notion that IOI is evil, and that the Sixers are ruthless corporate drones with no honor and no respect for the true spirit of the contest, that we're all sellouts, right? I nodded, barely resisting the urge to say, that's putting it mildly. Well, that's ridiculous, he said, flashing an avuncular grin that I suspected was generated by whatever diplomacy software he was running. The Sixers are really no different than a Gunter clan, albeit a well-funded one. We share all the same obsessions as Gunters, and we have the same goal. What goal is that? I wanted to shout. To ruin the Oasis forever? To pervert and defile the only thing that has ever made our lives bearable? Sorrento seemed to take my silence as a cue that he should continue. You know, contrary to popular belief, the Oasis really won't change that drastically when IOI takes control of it. Sure, we'll have to start charging everyone a monthly user fee and increase the Sims' advertising revenue, but we also plan to make a lot of improvements. Avatar content filters, stricter construction guidelines. We're going to make the Oasis a better place. No, I thought. You're going to turn it into a fascist corporate theme park where the few people who can still afford the price of admission no longer have an ounce of freedom. I'd heard as much of this jerk's sales pitch as I could stand. Okay, I said, count me in. Sign me up. Whatever you guys call it, I'm in. Sorrento looked surprised. This clearly wasn't the answer he'd been expecting. He smiled wide and was about to offer me his hand again when I cut him off. But I have three minor conditions, I said. First, I want a $50 million bonus when I find the egg for you guys, not 25. Is that doable? He didn't even hesitate. Done. What are your other conditions? I don't want to be second in command, I said. I want your job, Sorrento. I want to be in charge of the whole shebang. Chief of Operations, El Numero Uno. Oh, and I want everyone to have to call me El Numero Uno, too. Is that possible?
My mouth seemed to be operating independent of my brain. I couldn't help myself. Sorrento's smile had vanished. What else? I don't want to work with you, I leveled a finger at him. You give me the creeps.